Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a fateful trip.
In the year 1831, biologist Charles Darwin began a fateful journey on the HMS Beagle. On that journey, Darwin formulated the controversial theory of evolution, which has impacted society down to this day.
Our goal is to punch holes in that theory, so we'd like to welcome you to
Sink the Beagle.
Fire one, Captain.
What a shot, Stan. You can put those torpedoes right on the button.
Well, it takes some good eyesight and a straight aiming eye. I mean, that's about all we did.
I'm John Krulinski.
I'm Stan Nutz, and we want to welcome you to another episode of
Sink the Beagle, where we take a lighthearted and poke lots of fun looks at the issues of evolution and creation and what?
And beaks.
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 What about the beaks?
Let's talk about your beaks. No, beaks. Let's talk about beaks.
Beaks?
Beaks.
Not beakers.
B-E-A-K in the plural form.
Beaks.
Beaks. Because we want to talk today. We want to give them their due. We're going to go into the evolutionist ball field, and we're going to let them hit a home run because this is their best, quote-unquote, the best and most detailed demonstration to date.
To date.
Of Darwin's process.
The date was 1994, by the way, wasn't it?
That would be right. Maybe there's something better since then. But this is the best to date, and this is the best process yet discovered showing evolution at work.
Show me the beaks.
Show you the beaks.
That's what it says, I think.
That's exactly right. And they are showing the beak. And it is interesting because since Darwin sailed on the HMS Beagle and he landed and he spent that time on the Galapagos Islands in 1835... the scientific world has been scouring the planet for evidences of evolution in process.
In process because they really can't find it in the fossil record very clearly.
Yeah, kind of.
But not really.
Not really working. And let's face it, if they could see some evolution in process, something before our eyes, then they think they'll have a much stronger case.
Well, this actually comes from Darwin's home islands, the Galapagos. Where we put the torpedo in the Beagle today? We sunk it as a shipwreck off of there. But
the point
is that there was a couple scientists, a husband and wife team, I believe, the Grants, who have been studying Darwin's finches.
Darwin's finches.
Little boydies.
For 20 years on the Galapagos Islands. And they were doing their work, and suddenly in the 1990s, Jonathan Weiner came, a journalist came and visited these folks on the Galapagos Island and wrote their book. Yeah.
And their story, the Grants were lucky because while they were on the Galapagos Islands, something wonderful happened for evolution. There was a drought.
A beautiful thing, a drought.
A drought of water.
And why was that? And then it was followed by a deluge after some years of drought. And why was that a good thing, John?
Well, the drought forced change on the island because now only certain species were surviving. Well, actually, not species, but certain sized finches. It was
beaks.
Finches with bigger beaks.
Bigger beaks.
And it was the bigger beaked finches, and they were noticeable. 5%
growth
in the beak.
Yes.
It's big beak time, and they noticed change right in front of them based on their careful measurements of the prior years before the drought. The beak standard operating size was XYZ.
Yes.
And now it was XYZ plus 5%.
Yes.
And it was species wide.
And it was Darwin's theory acted out before their very eyes, a religious experience.
It was almost a religious experience, and they took careful measurements. They were very good, meticulous scientists.
Yes.
They took careful notes and careful recordings, and they a journalist, one of those monumental thinkers of our world, the journalists, published this book, well-written book, and it just says, see everybody, see our evidence. It proves that because of environmental changes, evolution is occurring right before our eyes.
He wrote the book, The Beak of the Finch, A Story of Evolution in Our Time, in 1994. And for his handiwork, he received a
Pulitzer Prize.
Pulitzer Prize. He did
you
a good job. Yes.
You win.
And it, what is very interesting is, again, that the evolutionists themselves say that after 160 or 70 years of looking around the world, we haven't found a better example than what Darwin first developed his theory from. And that is the size of finches' beaks. Now, that raises a good question.
Why is this really evolution
yes.
that is occurring, or he's excited, you can tell, or is it just a fluctuation in a local species? What would give some clues that would might lean toward not being evolution? You could look at the data a little differently and maybe come up with a whole different conclusion,
okay.
as some scientists have.
Okay, now just remember that as we start speculating here, no, actually not speculate, we'll give the hard facts. Let's remember what they themselves have said, that this is the best and most detailed demonstration to date of Darwin's process. Okay, whatever we're looking at right now, the evolutionists say this is the best we've got. Let's take a look at it. Did the finch's beaks end up with a different bird at the end of this 20-year study period?
No.
Okay. And thank you for listening to
Sing the Vigo. And we continue with the argument a little more than
yeah,
that.
Yeah, okay.
For our listeners. In other words, what we basically saw was the process yes. of natural selection where bigger bigger-beaked finches were able to compete and keep their genetic bigger beak size mm-hmm. to become a dominant a size
yes.
in the
survivor
species because of the drought. They were able to crack open the bigger seeds and the harder seeds and the lesser seeds.
The drier seeds and so forth in the drought. And so the big beak was an advantage to finches. The ones with the bigger beaks survived. It was natural selection. And that was the process that Darwin said pushed evolution, was natural selection. So they saw it. Yes, it happened. But
did evolution take place?
Did net evolution take place? In other words, did it end up with something different because they saw the deluge come?
But then something happened. You
yes.
say a flood of all funny things. About a flood. It wasn't
came.
A flood. It was just, it was an unseasonably wet time for a
yes,
while.
Yes.
And something amazing happened. It's not so much reported in the story
yeah.
as cleanly and clearly, which says that it bears evidence of saying, selective use of evidence again
yes.
for their best argument. But what happened is mm-hmm. the population's beaks went back to the pre-drought size.
That's right. And the variations within the species of finches there was the same population as they had before. So
and
there was not a net
change.
What it did show is that for a period of change in the environment, that the species was strong enough to make some changes.
Adaptations.
Through natural selection, some of the birds were able to survive through that difficult period. And then when things got back to normal again, they reverted back to the original genetic makeup of the population.
That was a stronger pool, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And all
more
it's showing then, all it's showing
that.
Is variation and fluctuation, or what we would call, in a sense, a microevolutionary change, if you want to even use
yes.
that much of
yes.
a phrase, because
uh-huh.
there was no speciation change.
Yes.
It was just a modification of the existing species that happened to have overall large beaks compared
yes.
to smaller beaks. And we're talking 5% here, too.
Sure.
But the new species, after times returned to what they call a more normal weather pattern, the
yes.
species quickly reverted back with no, zero, zilch, nada, net genetic change
okay.
into any kind of species.
So what does it demonstrate? In fact, it shows, in our opinion, we being unabashed, very biased, and narrow-minded creationists, that in fact it shows a tremendous flexibility within the species and ability to adapt within the special makeup of a finch to allow it to change rapidly in a climate that does change rapidly.
And you know what's really amazing is that they try to hint at in their book that somehow this wonderful best evidence of
yeah.
evolution in our present world actually says something about our origin. They try mm-hmm. to extrapolate a fluctuation within species with no net evolutionary change
right.
and extrapolate back into the distant past
yeah.
of that's how we came into existence, which
yes.
is the giantest leap of faith and logic both
yeah.
that I have seen
yeah.
witnessed in the last yes. decade almost.
and again, the fact that they say it's the best example to me is interesting. But anyway, so what we see is, in fact, some evidence that there is microevolution, and creationists have for some time now adopted
no problem.
A model that allows there to be some small
modifications
changes.
Modifications within the species.
Oh, sure. And, you know, for instance, I'm a bird watcher. My wife and I enjoy birding, and so we like to go notice the differences in birds. If you were to
you
look
like
at
to look at beaks, too?
We are beak watchers, too. when we look at, for instance, hairy woodpeckers and downy woodpeckers, there's no question that way back when they had the same grandma and grandpa.
Mm-hmm.
But over time, one got bigger than the other, and so one is a larger group than the other. Can they interbreed now? Possibly not. But that to say that they are a totally different creature from their ancestor is really stretching it.
And then to assume that something like a reptile evolved into a bird from that same process is almost ludicrous.
It really is.
In some respects. And so when we look at the things, the beak is just breaking up the wrong kinds of seeds for them, apparently.
Absolutely. And really, when you look at the work that he did, or I should say that Jonathan Weiner did, it's, again, interesting to see so much enthusiasm and so much kind of passion.
Religious fervor.
Yeah, for seeing in this something that supposedly proves the theory of evolution, but in fact is so much more open to an honest, skeptical revision of the theory. It strikes me that people really don't want to know or don't really want to understand what's going on.
Man, we want to remain ignorant or fools or stupid.
Well, Scripture calls that there is a group of people in the last days that are willfully ignorant.
Oh, we love it. The Church of the Willfully Ignorant. Stan, we have a torpedo text that we like to use that I think kind of illustrates a little bit of this kind of vain search for wisdom and knowledge that is apart from a creator God.
That's right. This is from 1 Corinthians chapter 1. And starting in verse 20, it says, "Where is the wise man? Where is the scholar?"
Here we are.
Quiet, let me start over again before I was rudely interrupted. "Where is the wise man? Where is the scholar? Where is the philosopher of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world?"
Foolish.
Uh-huh.
It seems foolish. The sad reality is that maybe the Grants, lovely, sweet couple, I suspect, spent way too many days just staring at birds and had to come up with something because, you know, after 20 years of work, for it to come down to just saying it was a fluctuation.
Yeah.
And you are hoping, you almost wish things. You almost wish things would happen in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
You almost wish for what you find.
Well, it has to do with the paradigm you're working from.
It's a power of imagination, almost a Darwinist imagination, more so than good science. And that's the hard part. We're hard on Darwinists in that respect, but we can get hard on religious people. Sometimes it's the power of wanting something to be so bad it can lead you into falseness and into error.
Mm-hmm.
There comes a time when you have to just humble yourself and say, you know what? We really don't know what this all means. All it does mean that we really can tell for sure is that birds with bigger beaks somehow survived in a time of drought because they were able to break open seeds that other birds couldn't, and they had enough food to survive.
That's right.
That's what we learned from it.
And when the changes, when the environment changed, the animals or the birds returned or reverted back to the normal variations that they had.
And maybe the smaller birds at that point were more competitive, could fly a little faster, get into some smaller places and get more food than the bigger ones. And all of a sudden the population reverts back. They should have probably followed up a little more with their evidence before they started stating their facts or their findings.
Well, I rather doubt in the scientific and scholarly and the journalistic world of today if somebody were to write a book entitled "A New Look at the Beak of the Finch," they possibly wouldn't get a Pulitzer Prize. What do you think?
I don't know. It may not be coming soon.
But anyway, we wanted you to have another look at the beak of the finch.
The best evidence ever.
The best evidence ever. And if that's the best evidence ever, I think as creationists, we're in pretty good shape.
Yep. So tune in again for another fun-filled
Sink the Beagle.
Thanks for listening to Sink the Beagle. If you have comments, questions, or requests for Dr. John or Dr. Stan, you can email them at hudahoe@mindspring.com. That's hudahoe, H-U-D-A-H-O, @mindspring.com. Be sure to listen in next time to Sink the Beagle.
So join us here each week, my friend. You're sure to get a smile from seven stranded castaways here on Gilligan's Isle.